I am joined by Matt McCall, assistant with Billy Donovan, national champion assistant, former head coach with UMass and with Chattanooga. Matt, how are you doing today?
True, man. I'm excited to talk some hoops. There's a lot going on in the hoops world right now, and was just tuning in a little bit to your show. I know we're talking college football playoff, and I don't know if I can give much of an opinion on that. Obviously, as a fan, I have an opinion. My alma mater is not in the college football playoff. I think Coach Napier is doing a good job, and is the program's turning in the right direction. But I'm excited to talk some hoops, man.
Yeah, you know, I am born and raised in Indianapolis. I would be out of my mind if I wasn't excited to talk some hoops as well. And we are getting into the time of year where we get the classics and the invitationals. We're going to talk about FSU in Florida, that game coming up a little bit later this week on a Friday. We're going to have it on the air as well right here on ESPN Pensacola. But one of the beautiful things, and I was talking about this a little bit yesterday, Matt, on the show, is one of the great things about college basketball is we get matchups like, you know, Texas Gonzaga, Duke Kansas, Kentucky Michigan State early in the season, where we don't necessarily get that in college football because, one, there's less games, and two, you know, you want to make sure your schedule is balanced enough that you can have some games giving you momentum going into conference play. A little bit different in college basketball, and it makes it great because you're learning about your team early on in the season. Is there anything that makes these invitationals worth tuning into for fans who maybe say, oh, it's early in the season, you know, it doesn't matter as much? I mean, there is a lot that you learn from these games. How important are these early classics and invitationals where you get a test against some of the best competition in the country?
Well, Drew, I think even going back to the last time we talked last week, right, how can we create a buzz for college basketball? And you had talked about what John Calipari said in terms of different things over the summer and different games over the summer. Well, there was a buzz about college basketball last night. And I even think if you go back to the Gonzaga-Michigan State game on the aircraft carrier, I mean, I remember being an assistant coach at the University of Florida, and we did that versus Georgetown in Jacksonville. Now, the game got canceled at the half because of condensation on the floor, but there was a buzz last night. And if you tuned into that first game, I mean, in your hometown of Indianapolis, right? Like, what a
That's
great
right.
game that was. And even the later game, right? You've got, obviously, Bill Self's not coaching. I got to give a shout-out to my man Norm Roberts, who was an assistant with us at the University of Florida when I was there. Who coached the game for Kansas versus John Shire, who's obviously a new head coach for Duke, taking over for Coach K. But what a game that was, the first game, right? I mean, just the double overtime to see Michigan State respond the way they did after losing, you know, essentially a heartbreaker to Gonzaga on that aircraft carrier, to be able to, like, you know, bounce back and go to Indianapolis and play that game. That's the buzz, and we need more of that and more of those games, especially, you know, we go back to that first week of college basketball. I mean, there were not a lot of big games that no one was really tuning into. I think it's important. I think too, especially for these Hall of Fame coaches, right? Tom Izzo, John Calipari, Bill Self, you know, Mark Few, all these guys. Hey, let's see where we're at, right? We've got some of the best players in the country. You know, let's line up and play, and it's going to help the game of college basketball. And I felt like, you know, the game on the aircraft carrier with Gonzaga and Michigan State was the right start. And then I thought last night, like, that should be the first night of college basketball, in my opinion, where there's a buzz. You've got four of the best teams in the country. Everybody's lining up and playing, and everyone tuned into that game. And, you know, the other thing, Drew, too, I told you, it was another really good game last night, and you asked me the other night, you know, give me a team that maybe fans aren't talking about, and that St. Louis-Memphis game was a good game last night. So the good games are coming, like you said, Texas Gonzaga tonight. But, man, I think, you know, the first couple nights of college basketball season, I think we need more of those matchups.
Yeah, and we're going to get a lot more this weekend, too. I mean, Virginia's taking on Baylor. IU is playing an undefeated Xavier team. Illinois taking on UCLA. So you just run down the line of some of these teams that are ranked right now in the top 25, and you're getting some good matchups. For take us back to when you're an assistant and when you're a head coach. Early on, we have some of these matchups where, you know, you're coaching at some smaller schools like UMass and Chattanooga. Not I don't know if you got many great opportunities to face some of these ranked teams like Texas Southern playing Auburn or UNT Wilmington taking on UConn or Jacksonville State taking on Alabama, but what is the message to players early on in the year? Not that, you know, to get them fired up a little bit, like, hey, yes, it's early in the season. Yes, you're going to be making some mistakes, but we're going to help you work through them. I mean, is that the message to players going into these games where we should be winning them, but if you falter a little bit, it's not the end of the world?
Well, I think, you know, again, it's how you build your schedule. I think when you're at a Chattanooga, my first game as a head coach, we lined up and played Georgia, and we actually won the game in overtime 92-90. What a way to start off a coaching career.
Yeah.
In terms of that. But, you know, I think when you're at the high major level as well, you know, you're trying to build a competitive schedule. And I think you've got to build it, Drew, based on the team that you feel like you have, right? If you have a veteran team or you have a really, really talented team, I think you need to build a schedule, especially early on, that tests your team, but also gives your team confidence, if that makes sense, right? So, you know, we're not trying to play all the cupcakes out there. We're going to play some challenging games, but we're also going to play some games where let's see if we can give our team some confidence here, especially if we're young. Now, if you have a veteran team and you're preseason ranked in the top 25 and, you know, you're trying to get an at-large bid in that NCAA tournament, which, you know, there's so many at-large bids out there, hey, we need to build a competitive schedule and we need to get tested here. And I think that was even like you look at a team like Gonzaga, and they played that exhibition versus Tennessee and they lost. And I had said this on the podcast on the Field of 68 and said it to someone else as well. You know, hey, Mark Few got their attention, right? I mean, they lost to Tennessee and everyone knew about it. It wasn't one of these secret scrimmages where the score didn't get leaked. It was a public charity exhibition game, and Mark Few got his team's attention. So I think when you play a big-time game, especially early like that, and maybe you don't have success, I think it's an opportunity to get your team's attention. But I think you have to schedule, you know, especially as a coach, based on, hey, this is how our roster is. We have a veteran team. We're trying to compete for an at-large bid. If you're a coach that's taken over year one of a program and you're trying to build a program, your scheduling philosophy is probably a little bit different at that point. But, hey, if you feel like you have a really good team, let's schedule the best and let's see where they're at, especially early on here.
Yeah, most definitely. Speaking with Matt McCall, former head coach at UMass in Chattanooga and also a national champion assistant coach with Billy Donovan at the University of Florida, his alma mater. Your alma mater, Matt, had a little bit of a tough loss to FAU, one that isn't expected, even though FAU were on fire from three. That was one of the things that Coach Golden talked about afterwards is, I mean, we just got bombed from three. And I thought it was interesting, too, played some audio back from his presser afterwards, and he said the halftime message was we got to limit their attempts at three because they were hot. We got to limit them to, like, no more than 7 3-point attempts. They get 11, they make 5, they end up losing the game. And there was a swing where they're up 10, all of a sudden they're down 14. They battled their way back, almost were able to win it. But with the game of basketball being a game of runs that it is, how important is the communication, obviously, between players but also coaches in the midst of a game? Hey, what do we need to tell them at this next huddle to either fire them up, fix the issue? I mean, what is the communication like within a coaching staff as the game's going on, not just the players who are on the floor?
Well, Drew, I think first, you look at that game, and I watched it from the start. You got to give Dusty May, the head coach of Florida Atlantic, a tremendous amount of credit. And even at the end of the game, one of his players calls a timeout, and they don't have one. And Florida's on a run and making a run there. And, you know, in that moment, your team can kind of shift and go into what are we supposed to do here? And his team knew exactly at that moment, we know what to do to get the ball in bounds so we can win this game. Nobody panicked. His team had great poise. And I thought in that moment, that goes back to all those timeouts that he was having with his team in terms of his messaging. This is what we're saying. This is what we're doing in this situation. And I thought, you know, first and foremost, you got to give Coach May and his staff and his team just credit for winning that game. Obviously, they made 13 threes. You know, they shot 54% from the three-point line, which is just, you know, an astronomical percentage to shoot, and it's tough for any team to beat. But I just think, you know, the credit you got to give him, you know, especially in those moments. But I thought Florida, you know, they had their chances. They made their run. You know, obviously Colin Castleton, we talked about him last week, terrific player. You know, he had 30 and 12 in the game with five block shots.
Yeah.
I think Kyle Lofton showed Gator fans exactly what he is. I think they've got to find another consistent guard from the perimeter that's going to be able to, night in and night out, have a lot of success for them. I thought that that was the difference in the game, is it's just FAU's guards. There was no answer for them, and they were terrific and outstanding. I think, you know, you got to give Coach May, former Florida assistant coach under Mike White, just a tremendous amount of credit. I mean, that moment where they called a timeout and they didn't have one and his team didn't flinch, there's a lot of different scenarios where the team would flinch in that situation and his didn't. You got to credit him and his coaching staff.
Speaking with Matt McCall here on ESPN Pensacola, I think that, you know, you bring up a good point here with coaches having their teams ready. I mean, this isn't the only upset that we've seen. Another one being Troy over Florida State. This is the first time, going even back to game two, where FSU started 0-2 in a season. Not only are they 0-2, they're 0-3 now. And I don't want to discredit Coach Hamilton, because he's a good basketball coach and he's been doing it for a long time. But one of the things that he said afterwards is that, you know, we're very inexperienced, and you know, you can only beat that topic to death for so long until people start to say, okay, it's not good enough. Like, you're supposed to be beating these teams. One of the stats that stuck out to me, Matt, and I'll get your thoughts on this game before we preview the matchup a little bit on for a Friday. But one of the big things that stuck out to me in this game is not the fact they allowed 79 points on defense. It's the fact that they were better in the rebounding category, finally. They were able to move the ball around a little bit. They didn't have a poor shooting percentage necessarily, but they shot 21 less times than Troy. Troy shot 65 times. Florida State shot 44 times. It's very difficult to win a game, if I'm correct, when you're shooting the ball 21 less times in a game.
If you're shooting the ball 21 less times in a game, you have zero chance of winning.
Yeah.
Right? Unless the other team is shooting, you know, 10% from the field. I think Florida State fans need to be a little patient with this group. Obviously, Leonard Hamilton and what he's done there year in, year out, is just outstanding. You know, they've got dealt a really bad blow with the whole Bob Miller situation and what the NCAA has done to that poor kid, who's trying to do things the right way. And the fact that he's not out there playing right now, in my opinion, is a disservice to him and his family. So I just think you've got to be a little bit patient. But that, to shoot the ball 21 more times than the other team, it's impossible to win. But Coach Hamilton, he's terrific. Stan Jones on his staff, longtime assistant coach. You know, that's the other thing with Coach Hamilton. He's had, you know, a huge amount of retention with his staff. You know, obviously I know Coach Gates and CY are now at Missouri, but Coach Jones has been with Coach Hamilton for a long time. They'll figure it out. I think you got to let him get healthy. I think they've got to get Bob Miller out there, who's, you know, a potential, you know, first-round draft pick. But like you said, 21 more shot attempts, it's impossible to win a game like that. Impossible.
Speaking with Matt McCall, former assistant at Florida, national champion assistant, and former head coach at UMass and Chattanooga. Looking ahead to this matchup, you know, based on how Florida State have played, you would say, yeah, they're probably going to get run out of the building by Florida and Colin Castleton and company. But the way that, you know, Florida got beat, I mean, obviously anything is possible. Going into the matchup, I think you have to probably favor Florida. And is there anything that you're looking for matchup-wise? Is it how FSU maybe defends the paint with Colin Castleton, who, as you said, had 30 and 12 and has been very dominant offensively and has been great? Is there anything that you're looking forward to seeing in regards to a matchup perspective with this one coming up in a couple days?
You know what? I think the biggest thing is let's get the rivalry back, right? I remember, you know, even back when I was in high school and the Florida-Florida State basketball game was always played the night before the Florida-Florida State football game. And wherever the game was, wherever the football game was being played, the basketball game was being played the night before. Mm. And Teddy Dupay, Brett Nelson, Udonis Haslam for the Gators were lining up and playing against the Seminoles. And I remember the Gators would come out in their black uniforms. And the crowds at those games, you know, credit Coach Donovan for generating and getting that rivalry going. Like, if you go back even before that, they used to play that game in Orlando and they called it the Milk Challenge, right? And it transitioned away from that. And that Florida-Florida State basketball game felt like the football game. And growing up as a Gator fan whose father played at the University of Florida for football, like it was a rivalry. And it was important to each team who won that game, not for seeding purposes in the NCAA tournament or anything like that, but man, just create the buzz around the rivalry and, man, throw out your records. Let's go out and see what team plays the best.
Yeah, and that one of the things, you know, we get that a little bit with Rivalry Week, and whether it be Duke in North Carolina or whoever, those are the things that, you know, make college basketball awesome and the matchups and, you know, strategically putting them, as you said, in certain places for the games to get maybe a little bit more hype than what we traditionally see. Again, speaking with Matt McCall here on the Sports Drive, I want to transition real quick. One more thing with college hoops before some NBA stuff that we're going to hit. When you're watching these games early on, and you know the expectations go into the season, and we get ready for conference play, I want to go back to the scheduling aspect of things. And you looking at, you know, from a smaller school perspective to a bigger school perspective, mid-majors are knocking off big-time teams. Is that a talent gap narrowing between the mid-majors and the majors? I mean, I know we see stuff in the NCAA tournament, Matt, but now that we're seeing things early on in the year, is that one of those things that you chalk up to, well, it's early in the season and the team's not focused? Or are these mid-major teams actually getting a lot better and the coaching is getting a lot better where the gap is narrowing in terms of talent, where Duke is not necessarily going to blow out a team just because they're a mid-major? These teams are going to play them close.
Well, I think it's a couple things, right? I think the coaching, I think, you know, there's terrific coaches out there at the mid-major level, right?
Yeah, a lot of them.
I don't know if the talent gap, I think if you're Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, you're the blue bloods, right? Carolina, are you attacking the transfer portal as much? No, you're getting the top 20, 25 high school players in the country. And some of these mid-majors now, they're older than the high major teams. They're more experienced, you know, and I know we reference Florida a lot in the two times that I've come on your show. But the one year when I was at Florida as an assistant coach in 2014, we were the number one team in the country, won 30 games in a row, and lost in the Final Four. We only had one guy on that team that is currently playing in the NBA. But we were older. We were more experienced than everyone. Mm. We beat Kentucky three times that year. So I think not so much the talent gap, I think it's more the experience factor and the age. If you can stay older and you can have more experience than some of these other teams, you got a chance to beat them that are quote-unquote more talented. But I think the coaching at the mid-major level too, I mean, I think you've got, you know, terrific coaches. I talked about Mark Schmidt at St. Bonaventure from the Atlantic 10. I mean, he lost 99% of his roster this year. But I don't think it matters. Back in 2017, he had the same situation. His two leading scorers both averaged 20 points a game. The next year, he finished fourth in the A-10. So I just think there's so many good coaches out there. I think that makes a difference as well.
Speaking of Matt McCall, to piggyback off there real quick, I think that's what helps college basketball. I mean, looking at name, image, and likeness, I think that maybe convinces kids to maybe stay another year instead of go to the NBA, especially if they're fringe players where, yeah, you might get picked in the second round, but you can still return to college and make some money with NIL and get your degree and everything like that. It gives them a little bit more of an incentive to stay. That I think that makes college basketball in general a better product, maybe even, a lot more than college football, too, where we see it doesn't matter. I mean, Alabama's playing Austin Peay this weekend. They're going to kill them in football. If it were a basketball game, not that Alabama wouldn't win the game, but similarly to what we just saw the other night with Alabama and South Alabama, the Tide really struggled from three, had 21 turnovers. The only reason they probably won is they had 25 offensive rebounds and it gave them extra possessions. I mean, we're seeing games that would normally be blowouts in football and basketball actually be pretty tight, and I think that helps make the product a little bit better and more appealing to fans. Is that something that you agree with, just with the portal and all the other changes that we've got going? It helps teams?
Well, I think you bring up a great point, too, right? The three-point line in college basketball is the greatest equalizer. And if a team goes out, much like FAU versus Florida the other night, they make 13 threes, and Florida's, quote-unquote, got more talent, they're whatever the case may be, if you make 13 threes in a game, you're going to put yourself in a position to win, right? And I think that line is the greatest. Where in football, not that basketball is not a physical sport, because it is, but in football, a lot of times, the bigger, faster, stronger team wins. That's just the way that the sport's lined up. In basketball, it's not like that. If you come down, you look at a team – and there was a possession that I saw on Twitter of Bellarmine versus Louisville the other night. I know Louisville's struggling in Coach Payne's first year. Mm-hmm. They never once bounced the ball in the half court in the entire possession. It was all passes. And then they make a three at the end of the possession. Like, you run into a team that gets hot from behind a three-point line, it's the greatest equalizer in the sport. You don't have that in football. Right, there's no equalizer in terms of that. A lot of times in football, the bigger, faster, stronger team wins. In basketball, you run into a team that gets hot behind that arc, they can beat anybody on any given night. And that's why I think the NCAA tournament's the greatest sporting event out there, because that's what happens. I mean, maybe one person last year picked St. Peter's over Kentucky, and they played better on that night, and they got hot from behind a three-point line, and that's why it's the best event out there.
Matt McCall joining the Sports Drive to talk some hoops. Final thing for you, real quick. I want to get your thoughts on this. So, and it could relate to college. It can relate to high school. It can relate to the NBA. But particularly with the Brooklyn Nets and this whole situation with Kyrie and just the Nets in general. I mean, they allow 153 points last night to the Kings, who are they have a lot of talent on that team. But when you have a lot of distractions off the floor, whether it be with trade rumors, whether it be with a player saying something or posting a link like Kyrie has, whether it be the whole COVID vaccine deal, how difficult is it, do you think, from the pros compared to the college to really rein your players in? In college, it's a little bit easier to do that, I think, where in the NBA, you're dealing with egos, you're dealing with people making more money, you're dealing with professionals, essentially, quote-unquote. How difficult of a situation is this for Jacques Vaughn in Brooklyn, and I guess, would you handle the situation any differently than how he's kind of handled it? Or just putting on your coaching goggles again real quick and looking at the situation from a coaching perspective, how would you handle this with Brooklyn?
Well, I think first, at that level, at the professional level, I think you're dealing with a different animal, and you're pros for a reason. You got to that level for a reason. I think that, it is a challenge, no question, for the coach, but it's a professional organization. I think your locker room is the most important thing, and I would say this in terms of college and high school and every – and the same thing in the NBA. I think Coach Vaughn is up against it a little bit right now. I think he's got some tremendous challenges. You're only as good as your culture. And your culture starts with every single person that touches your program. And if you're in college, it's the athletic director, it's the trainer, It's the strength coach. It's the secretary. It's the academic coordinator. It's your assistant coaches, the student managers. It's anybody that touches your program, that everybody has to be all in and all on the same page. And if you get one guy that's a little bit outside of that, it's hard to have success. I think at the professional rank, I think it's equally as important in terms of your culture. But I think that there's so much money involved. There's so many different people involved. And guys are showing up to work to do a job. I think it's a little bit different. But still, if there's one person in that locker room, if there's two people in that locker room that are not all in on the message that the head coach is sending, that the general manager is sending, that whoever's, it's hard to have success. And I think that that's what you're seeing right now in Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn, from Sean Marks, obviously, I thought Steve Nash was up against it a little bit. You know, I think he was in a situation too where, you know, his last day of work, he probably slept pretty good that night when he got home, not having to deal with some of the stuff that he was having to deal with on a day in, day out basis. But I think there's high character people within that organization in terms of Sean Marks and Jeff Peterson and Eddie Birdsong up in the front office. But I think, you know, comparing college to the NBA, I think it's a little different. But still, you're only as good as your culture, and everybody has to be all in. And when you get that, you can win back-to-back national championships. You can go to a Final Four. You can win an NBA championship. You can do those types of things. But it's got to be everybody all in, every single person touching that program. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, I think Durant's one of the best players to ever play. He's definitely one of the best scorers to ever play. I know in talking to people that know him, he loves the game. He works at it. He's not a guy that's going to sit out or want to do those types of things. He wants to go out there and play the game that he loves. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we're still early here, but the East is it's competitive. There's some really, really good teams out there in the East. So we'll see how it plays out for sure, Drew.
Yeah, there definitely are some good teams in pro level, obviously very different from college, but both very, very good. Talking basketball with Matt McCall. Matt, I love the time. I mean, the time totally flies by when I'm talking to you about some college hoops and basketball in general. You have a good one. Look forward to talking to you next week. We'll be recapping that FSU and Florida game and talking about a whole lot more. Have a good one.
Drew, can't wait, man. Excited about it.